Good morning. Thank you very much. I'm excited to be a part of this panel. That's been really interesting, and I'd like to invite you all to switch mental gears a little bit, because I'm going to be talking about capacity of state health departments and their injury and violence prevention programs. But first, I'd like to recognize my co-authors on this project, Sinead Ryan, Amira Patterson, who's here with us today, Jamila Porter, and Amber Williams. I have no financial relationships to disclose, but I do have some objectives to talk about. So the first is that I'd like to introduce the Safe Space Alliance. I'll be presenting key findings from the 2011 State of the State Survey, which we also call SOTS. We've had four administrations in 2005, 2007, 2009, and 2011. They'll be able to talk about some changes over time on key variables. And I'd like to unpack a little bit about capacity building, because again, this is assessing the capacity of the injury and violence prevention programs. And I'll discuss some implications for IVP programs nationally. IVP stands for Injury and Violence Prevention, and I'll probably use it throughout the presentation. So first, Safe States Alliance. Safe States is a membership organization. We currently have 510 members that include injury prevention professionals, public health professionals, students, and really anyone interested in injury and violence prevention. We have various key activities, but the one that I'll be focusing on today is enhanced public health agency capacity. So one of our main tools to be able to measure and talk about IVP capacity at state health departments is the State of the State Survey, or SOTS. As I mentioned, there have been four administrations, most recently in 2011, and it's funded by the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control at CDC. So I will note that the contents of this presentation are solely the responsibility of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the view of CDC. Thankfully, that was recorded. Okay, so SOTS is organized around five core components, and these core components were developed in 2003 by Safe States Alliance with input from experts in the IVP field. And the first is design, implement, and evaluate programs. The second is build a solid infrastructure. The third is affect public policy. The fourth is collect and analyze data. And the fifth is provide technical support and training. So these are the five areas that SOTS measures. And the underlying assumption here is that by building capacity in these five core component areas, state IVP programs will be better positioned to decrease injury and violence-related morbidity and mortality in their state. So that's a lot of information. For today, I'm going to focus on three aspects, infrastructure, program, and public policy. First, a few notes about our methodology. SOTS is an online survey, though paper options are available. Its self-report is completed by the state IVP program director or another representative, and states report on their fiscal year activities. Right now, we're working on the 2011 report, which will be ready in early 2012. Responses were exported to SAS and SPSS, and we generated descriptive statistics and inferential statistics. No specific states are identified in the reporting. We're really trying to look at a national picture of the IVP program capacity. So the first is to design, implement, and evaluate programs. So as many of you in this room are aware, when we're talking about IVP programs, we're talking about a whole universe of activities and content areas that really look across the lifespan, from preventing childhood injuries and teen dating violence prevention to preventing elder abuse and older adult falls. So SOTS asked states to identify their primary program areas for the last fiscal year. In 2011, these were the top five primary focus areas: motor vehicle injury prevention, falls prevention, sexual assault rape prevention, prevention of injuries to children, and child passenger safety. So these are, among all the state IVP programs, these are the most frequently reported primary focus areas. So we can look at this across the SOTS administrations. We see that motor vehicle safety entered the list in 2007, and in 2009 became the most frequently reported primary focus area, and was the same for 2011. fall injury entered the list in 2009, and it moved up a spot among the most frequently reported in 2011. Sexual assault rape prevention has been on the list throughout the SOPS administration, though its position has varied, which is similar to injuries to children and child passenger safety as well. So an important question, and here they all are. So an important question to ask about the programs that states are focusing on is if they are doing evaluation in these areas, and if so, what types of evaluation activities they are doing. So what this table shows is for 2011, it lists the top primary focus areas, and then states were asked if they had an evaluation plan for this area, if they were doing process evaluation data, if they had process evaluation data, or if they had outcome evaluation data. So we can see that among states that reported that they were doing work in this area, any of these areas, half or less than half report the presence of an evaluation plan. And if we look towards the right-hand side at the outcome evaluation data, except for child passenger safety at 64%, less than half of states are reporting that they have outcome evaluation data in these primary topic areas. So I think this is important to consider because outcome evaluation is important to measure program impact and success. So evaluation capacity may be an area for further room growth and support. So now I'm going to look at building a solid infrastructure. So in 2011, 89% of state health departments reported that they do have an identified injury and violence prevention program. Among this group, 57% said that they had a centralized activity structure where most of the activities were together in that identified program, and 32% have a decentralized structure where they do have an identified program, but activities are integrated across topic areas such as maternal child health, EMS, and other areas. It's important to note that, though, that in 2011, 11 states that were participating still reported that they do not have an identified program. So we can look at this to compare 2009 and 2011. So 2009 is to the left-hand side in blue, and 2011 is in red on the right. So we do see that percentage-wise, there's a decrease in programs that in states that are saying they do not have an identified program. But among those that do have a program, we see that there's a move towards decentralization. So this could reflect an increased movement in injury and violence prevention or in public health more generally to try to support integration of activities, which could support more comprehensive programs, but bring questions about coordination. So we also asked where the programs were located, and so we can see here that health promotion, disease prevention, community health, behavioral health is where most of the injury and violence prevention programs are located in the state, among the states. Maternal and child health, emergency medical services, and epidemiology departments also house these activities. But what I should note is that we also looked at how many times an IVP program had moved anytime after 2005. And we saw that more than half of the states reported that they had a reorganization at some point. So that means they moved from one of these categories to another. So I think that speaks to that there's been a lot of change and movement across these areas, which may bring questions about continuity and sustainability, but it would be interesting to further explore among those who did not move if they were able to build greater capacity, which is not part of this presentation, but a question for the future. If we look at infrastructure, related to funding sources, we see that all the injury and violence prevention programs received federal funds. 36 of the 47 had both federal and state funding, and 19 out of the 47 had federal, state, and other. So moving forward, if we continue to talk about integration of programs, there may be questions around how we can further diversify these funding sources. We also asked if programs had a full-time director. So this shows across all the SOPS administrations after a dip in 2007 and 2009. In 2011, we had the greatest percentage of programs reporting that they had a full-time director at 77%. We also asked the percent time that programs had access to an epidemiologist, recognizing that collecting and analyzing data is an important function of the IVP program. So we see that from 2009 to 2011, there was an increase in the number of programs who said that they had 100% or more FTE, full-time equivalent, access to an epidemiologist. And we see a similar decrease between the number of programs who are reporting that they have zero access to an epidemiologist. So we're seeing increased staff support around data in the programs overall. And finally, about staff, this looks at, across all of the programs, the number of full-time staff equivalents that are working on injury and violence prevention and the types of activities that they're engaged in. The largest percentage was intervention and program coordination at 32%, followed by data collection and analysis at 24%. So now I'm going to talk about affecting public policy. So we asked states if they had formal protocols in place to communicate with policymakers. And we can see that across administrations, those formal protocols have gone down from 89% in 2009 to 77% in 2011. And looking at 2011 data specifically, we asked programs if they use these different methods of communicating with policymakers, and we also asked if their partners or their collaborators had used this method. So we recognize that there's a great variation among states as far as what they are permitted or not permitted to do around policy, and we also understand that the role of public health departments, specifically state health departments, and the role of policy may be evolving and changing. We do know that they have a role in answering data requests and responding to questions around policy, but that may look different in other states as far as which ones or which of these methods they are able to engage in. So then we compared that to the method that states reported in 2009. So this is the change from 2009 to 2011 in these different types of methods. The blue arrows here indicate methods for which there was an increase for both the IVP program use and partner use. That included work to develop enforced regulations for IVP, invited legislators or local legislators to meetings and events, or invited congressional delegates to meetings and events. Then these arrows show methods for which both the IVP programs had reported decreased use, and they said their partners also decreased their use of it. So that was work to increase public awareness of laws, recommend health department positions on bills, requested the opportunity to review bills, evaluated, assessed, monitored impact of laws, and conducted cost-benefit analysis of IVP policies. And then this shows the two together. So I think the main takeaway message here is that we see more decreased arrows in the net change method used by the IVP and more increased arrows around the method used through collaboration, which may indicate different roles depending on where you are in the field of IVP prevention, so different roles for the state health department versus their collaborators. And it asks the question about how these groups can work in conjunction to respond to the policy needs in their state. So now I'd like to talk a little bit more about capacity, because it's a concept that gets talked about a lot, but I think we're still working to understand some of the ways that capacity interacts with the health department's ability to do their work and to serve local community groups in their state. So I have some preliminary findings to share around capacity. So we asked the state injury and violence prevention programs what kinds of local support they were able to provide groups in their state. So these things were like mini grants, supplies, equipment, TA and training, also in-kind support for epidemiology, data support, program development, and evaluation. And all these resources are flowing into the local programs. So what I have here, the way that we thought about capacity for this is we looked at three key staff that a health department injury and violence prevention program might have. We looked at the presence of a full-time director, the presence of a full-time epidemiologist, and any access to an evaluator. And we look to see if any of those in place significantly affected the program's ability to provide those types of support. So we use the Fisher exact test, and the p-values are up here, but we can see that having a full-time director did impact the program's ability to provide all of the supports that we asked about. Having a full-time epi in place was positively associated with being able to provide technical assistance and also in-kind support for epidemiology and data. As you might anticipate, having an epi helps you provide that support, and also evaluation in-kind support. We found that having access to an evaluator was positively associated with providing technical assistance, and again, evaluation in-kind support, as you might expect. Similarly, we looked at the kind of technical assistance a program was able to provide given having those three staff in place. We asked about student practical experiences, responding to TA requests, offering courses or academic credits, providing in-person trainings, as well as satellite trainings. So here is a similar table. We saw that full-time director was positively associated with being able to provide practical experiences to students, respond to TA requests, and offer courses. We didn't find any statistically significant association with having a full-time epi and being able to provide training in TA, though having an evaluator was associated with offering practical experience and courses for academic credit. And then we looked at public policy and those three roles. So you might not want to know how the sausage is made, similar to the legislative process, but we did ask about it. And there were 14, these are the same 14 activities that I talked about before as far as the methods we asked about, state IVP departments using. This table is very busy, but what I wanted to show is that among the 14, there were only 7 for which we found any statistical significance, so I'm just going to focus on those 7. But in the interest of disclosure, we saw that it wasn't, something to consider for all of these, but it was having a full-time director in place made it more likely that states answered yes, they were working to increase public awareness of laws, also that they requested the opportunity to review bills, and that they invited state or local legislators to the meeting. Having a full-time epi in place made it more likely for them to respond that they sent materials to policymakers and testified at local hearings. That might be related to having the data analysis and the materials available to prepare for those activities, and also more likely to invite state or local legislators to meetings and events. And finally, the evaluator was correlated with working to create and encourage adoption of organizational policies, participating in boards, requesting the opportunity to review bills, sending materials to policymakers, and also inviting state or local legislators to meetings and events. So I think there are some limitations that it's important to recognize. The first is that SOPS is a self-report survey, and we know that the IVP director can change between surveys. So that means the respondent is changing. So when we're looking at trend data, that difference of respondent can impact the responses that we get. Not all states or territories respond, so we don't have all of the states reporting, though we did have an N of 47 in 2011. Some questions change over time, and that limits our ability to report on trends and measure changes over time. We think that small change in wording isn't going to make a big difference, but when we tried to really look across time, it made an impact. And there's really more exploration necessary to understand capacity's role. What does capacity mean for the activities that the IVP program is able to engage in and the program impact they are able to document? Some implications for injury and violence programs nationally. It seems that staff time and skills for injury and violence prevention has increased over time, and we're seeing a movement towards decentralized activities, which could be good for sustainability, though there's a question around challenge to coordination. There are certainly opportunities to further diversify funding among state, local, and private sources. More can be done to support evaluation, so we have more information about the impact that these programs are having at the state and local level. There's continued challenges for policy work. We see some movement towards less formal protocols in place, and the use of some methods is decreasing. And regarding capacity building, we saw that having key staff members in place was associated with being more likely to engage in some key activities, but definitely more is necessary to better understand. Thank you very much.
Could I take a question or two?
Hi.
Great presentation, and I was struck by one of the limitations in that you mentioned change over time. Mm-hmm. And from the perspective of a state health department doing injury surveillance and prevention, that change over time is important from a policy standpoint. Because between 2005 and 2007, CDC changed the way they fund states to provide injury surveillance and prevention. So are you qualifying any information in light of what's happening from that state perspective from the policy? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I appreciate you brought it up because we can bring that back to the folks who are working on the written report, and it's good to know that that's a question people would have. We ask the question that says, okay, among these priority areas, what factors influence how you pick that? And so the answers to those are always, you know, our state morbidity and mortality data. That's what we use to pick the primary source. But we also ask if there were political considerations and if there were funding considerations. So I think we do not name it specifically to say, did CDC switch impact what you're working on? But I think it's a great point that that's really what it's getting at. But we are trying to report on the constellation of factors that will influence what a state is moving forward with for its primary focus areas. And I should also say that we ask states to make a distinction between primary focus areas, secondary focus areas, and other focus areas. We understand that different respondents may take that to mean different things, so it's a difficult question to report on. But I want to make the point that just because those were the five primary topic areas, it's by no means the only topic areas that states reported. I was. I definitely was. Yeah. Again, I would say that it's this difficult distinction between primary focus area, secondary focus area, and other focus areas. And so I would say that states have just, it's not reported as a primary focus area among the top five of what they're doing. But I also was surprised to see that.
Thank you. I'm wrong about this, but it seems to me that the big increase in decentralization was not the challenge, is not just the problem, not potentially just the challenge, the coordination, but may indicate a really lessening of the focus and the emphasis and the power of injury prevention in the state health department. A big, big cost concern.
Well, you know, I really appreciate that comment because I think that when we discussed the data as a team, we definitely had that discussion. What's interesting is that it's happening at the same time as states are saying they do have an identified IVP program. That went up between 2009 and 2011. So there does seem, and there's more full-time directors, so there's a full-time director of something, right? So it's this interesting thing that two things are happening at the same time. And I think that if we have the opportunity in the future to have more qualitative data and the opportunity to really unpack what's happening there, that would be an important thing to consider.
Thank you.
That is the way the question was intended. I think it's a good question. We can't say how they responded.
And the other question is, money drives everything, and obviously the CDC's priorities have driven the change in priorities, but I'm wondering if you can take a look at the states who don't receive, there are certain states that have always been sort of more focused on injury prevention. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a question that we explored in the 2009 data, that there was a supplement that came out, and it was called the CORE report, and Amira worked on that quite a bit, so she's probably having flashbacks. But we did have the 2009, that kind of comparison, and again, it's really useful to know that that is a question folks have, and so when we're thinking about secondary analysis of the 2011 data, it's helpful to know that's a question. Do I have a perspective on that? My personal work at Safe States is really immersed on a specific project, which is evaluating the CORE VIPP project, as you know. And so I'm not sure that I have the national lens to really be able to speak to that accurately.
Kevin?
Yeah, I just had a question about the full-time directors. What was that question? What constituted a full-time director? Is that someone 100% dedicated to injury prevention, or did that just happen to be a section of bureau chief with injury prevention in their portfolio?
That was a 100% FTE.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if you can say that some of the relationships between those divisions and bureaus under the state health department. My observation is that most of the state's injury prevention programs are patent on the federal structure, like the CDC, National Injury Center, completely separate from NIOSH and state. And you're applying the same sort of structure to the state and maybe state level, which I'm concerned about, because in the state of New York, there is the Bureau of Patient Health and Safety, which has a lot of resources and expertise in the injury area. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the state health department really would use that resource instead of that quite separate program, which on injury, but nothing to do with occupational safety, which I found so necessary. It's a waste of so I just wonder if you are trying to address that kind of administrative issues. I know it's a very complex issue.
Mm-hmm.
And another question is some of the special relationships between the state health department and the municipal health department. Maybe that New York is a unique case. Because the New York State Health Department is way bigger, more powerful, stronger than the state health department. On the EU program, maybe the New York State Health Department is not even a member state of your organization.
Mm-hmm.
But I work with both agencies.
Mm-hmm.
The New York State Health Department in review definitely is much better financed, much better trained, and I think it's much stronger. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying anything bad about the state health but they continue to rely on the state of the government, which I think is
Ken?
No, I just wanted to respond to a few of the points, and I really appreciate you bringing up those considerations, and I think it's important also to have a mirror in that way. As you pointed out, this really focuses on state health departments, but they certainly aren't the only places where injury and violence prevention is happening in the state, so I really appreciate that reminder, and I think we've tried to think through, there's a whole section on collaboration and who the state health department is collaborating with. And some of our struggles in that area, you brought up NIOSH, we also consider the Governor's Office of Highway Safety as a key partner, knowing that folks are working on motor vehicle. And of course, the Domestic Violence and Sexual Violence Coalition, given RPE funding, rape prevention education funding. So I think that our struggle has been, and there's a phrase that we say, if you see one state, you've seen one state. And so it's been really difficult to be able to project or to talk about a national picture, given that those key partners might be different for different states. So it's something we do want to learn more about, and we'll probably be asking our members for some groupthink around that, because it's been a big challenge.
We're over time now, so I'm going to take one more quick question and then ask you to come up and talk to any of the presenters that you have questions of.
So I just have a brief observation and at risk of overinterpreting the data that you've got. I'm just wondering about trends between an increasing interest in analytics to drive program effectiveness and a competitive function of budget precision and fiscal constraints that are leading people to get very conservative in terms of their interactions with legislators and things like that. So it's kind of pop up above on the radar for potential look at hard look at elimination of reduction. That's kind of what I'm just qualitatively seeing when I'm looking at
that. I think that's a great point, and our state directors could definitely speak to that more eloquently than I could. But I think, one way or the other, states are really asked to show their program impacts, and so having those evaluation data are really key to be able to do that. So. Great, thank you.
Thank you so much.